or tell me of any difficulties in an email or text message. I will always make time to answer. Good luck, and see you soon. The letter slipped from my hands. What a list! The idea of turning into Marie Kondo didn't exactly inspire me. And given the state of my house, I had my work cut out. Not to mention having no time to do it. I always came back pretty late from work to compensate for working only part-time, and as for Wednesdays, supposedly my free day, they were a real marathon of extracurricular activities and medical appointments for Adrienne. Claude had forgotten one small detail. I wasn't a housewife. I didn't have empty days ahead of me. I immediately shared my concern with him in a text message. Hello. Mission spring clean. Impossible. Never have time. Suggestions? Yours, Camille. I anxiously awaited his reply. It arrived in an email later that day. Dear Camille, time, as such, is not a problem. Only your mindset makes it one. If you convince yourself that time is a problem, it will be. If, on the other hand, you are convinced that you will succeed in finding time, you'll probably be able to. Try. You'll see. Your brain believes what you tell it. But don't worry. We will have a proper discussion about mindset and positive thinking soon enough. For now, try to see how you can devote a quarter or half an hour to your task in the evening or on the weekend. And remember, energy creates energy. At first, these efforts will seem very difficult, but then less and less so. The more you do, the more you'll want to do. Good luck, Claude. So, he wanted me to become the Rocky of the Feather Duster? Okay, I'd show him what I was made of. That same evening, as soon as Adrienne was in bed, I armed myself for an all-out assault on dust and disorder. On the way back from the office, I had bought armloads of garbage bags and all kinds of cleaning products. Let the battle begin. Sebastian followed these maneuvers with wide eyes in which I detected a mocking gleam that I took for skepticism. I couldn't care less. Nothing was going to stop my domestic tornado. Well, nothing until I opened the closet in the hallway and saw piles of papers overflowing from battered, split-open boxes, useless bric-a-brac you might have found in the most unlikely flea markets, from a discarded doll to a garden lantern. We don't have a garden. Heaps of clothes tottering like a house of cards, clothes that were too small, too big, worn out, holey jumpers, moth-eaten jumpers, pilled jumpers, badminton rackets stuck in an unused fitness step, souvenir tins with a lighter from a long-forgotten concert, unopened letters, letters open but from people whose faces I could no longer recall, from people I loved but with whom I'd lost touch. A packet of scented handkerchiefs found in a souvenir shop in the first flush of romance. A photo of my first boyfriend. How could I ever possibly have been in love with him? A school notebook, a bag of sugar-coated almond favors from my wedding day that were all stuck together after all these years, but that I'd kept for some inexplicable reason. I dragged all of it out of the closet. Faced with this mountain full of dust, I admit I almost threw in the towel. But as I gradually reduced it, I found I was regaining my own space in my head. This spring cleaning therapy was doing me a world of good. Night after night, I gained ground over the disorder. I hunted down the nasty surprises hidden behind pieces of furniture, and in the forgotten corners, the objects you did not dare throw away because you had become so used to seeing them. Farewell to rebellious dust, disgusting hairs in the sink, stubborn lime scale and unsightly rings. I refused to flag or give in and ended up richly rewarded. By the end of the week, the apartment looked almost like a show home. I was over the moon.
Wow, there's no stopping you, is there?
said Sebastian with feigned irony, in which by now there was a hint of admiration. It looks good, doesn't it? I said.
Yes, yes it does. It's just a bit surprising that it's come over you all of a sudden. That's all.
What? Was I supposed to send him an advance warning? Were there procedural bottlenecks in the art of household happiness then? His tepid response really pissed me off. I wanted him to share my enthusiasm, to help me. Why did he always behave like a spectator in our married life? I felt like shaking him, telling him how urgent it was for us to change things, that his passivity was not only stifling me, but eating away at my feelings for him just as surely as waves eat at a cliff's edge. The following weekend, though, I persuaded my boys to help brighten up our world. We headed for Home Depot. I was delighted at this final stage, the cherry on the cake of my mission spring clean. I quickly realized, however, that this was not going to be the jolly outing I had hoped for. We wanted completely different things. Whereas I was dreaming of taking my time in front of every display in search of good ideas, Sebastian wanted to speed through the store at a brisk trot so that he could be out again as quickly as possible. He seemed to think the first can of paint we came across would do the trick. I dragged him round, trying desperately to cast an eye over what was for sale, while he sighed and twitched impatiently. My coat hung on my right arm, and Adrien hung on my left. To my horror, my son thought it was hilarious to touch everything we passed. I was almost foaming at the mouth by the time I found the paint department. It was now or never if I wanted to motivate my troops. I was hoping that the evocatively named cans of colors would stir their imagination so that they would finally show a bit of enthusiasm in choosing the one for their bedrooms. With Adrien, it worked like a charm. He chose the Young Shoots shade, a lawn green that coincided exactly with his passion for soccer. Sebastian was much more hesitant, but for the sake of peace and quiet, finally accepted an iced coffee and a satin nougat. I was half satisfied, which was something. But what happened at the checkout set my nerves so much on edge that I almost dumped everything and left empty-handed. Someone was holding up the line because he wanted to buy some screws, and no one knew the price. A hardware assistant was asked to come to the register. I took great pleasure imagining this man having to swallow his screws slowly, one by one. But worse than the delay were all those diabolical last-minute temptations stuck under the noses of children out of their skulls with boredom. What Machiavellian marketing genius dreamed that up? Candy, batteries, flashlights? Naturally, Adrien wanted something simply for the fun of having it, all the while offering me a brilliant explanation for why he absolutely needed it. I was torn between my increasing irritation and a sense of pride at his convincing spiel. For the sake of domestic harmony, I gave in and allowed him to buy a packet of apple-flavored Tic Tacs. Yes, he exclaimed, punching the air. Finally, it was our turn. Our bags were filled, then the exit, fresh air, the parking lot, the slamming trunk. Adrien asking us to turn up the volume and singing at the top of his voice. Our silence. The rest of the weekend was spent in a jumble of drop cloths, rollers, miles of paper towels, old t-shirts covered in paint stains, a pizza party, and improvised camping in the middle of the living room. And afterward, the reward. A brand new home. And we ourselves, our nostrils saturated with the smell of fresh paint, our arms and legs stiff from having to apply so many coats. Happy. Quite simply, happy. 8. During the week, I sent the photos of my home improvements to Claude. He congratulated me, then sent an email explaining what I had to do for the next stage, the inner spring clean. This was to allow me to identify and get rid of everything polluting my environment and my relationships with others.
You know, Camille, life is like a hot air balloon. To go higher, We have to know how to lighten the load and to throw overboard all those things that prevent us rising.
As well as this, he asked me to write each aspect of my life that I wanted to see the last of on a separate sheet of paper.
Bring them all with you on Wednesday at 2 p.m., if you can, to André Citroën Park in the 15th arrondissement. Have a good evening.
Now what was he up to? Whatever it was, I was sure it would be worth going along with, even though at times I wondered where all this was leading me. I felt quite stirred up, but sometimes nervous. Wasn't I going to miss my peaceful little existence, which might not involve any big risks, but had no great shocks either? No, definitely not. I carried on reading his email, which had an attachment and a postscript.
I'm attaching a very interesting diagram that should help inspire your new mood. It explains the vicious circle and the virtuous circle. Tell me what you think of it.
I clicked on the attachment and discovered two clearly presented columns.
Vicious circle. Negative thought leads to hunched, floppy body position. Leads to lack of energy, sadness, discouragement, fears. Leads to drifting, apathy, failure to take care of yourself. Leads to low self-esteem. Leads to, I'm hopeless, I'll never do it. Leads to closing in on yourself, lack of opening up to others. Leads to feeling of getting nowhere. Leads to lack of vision, uncertain perspectives. Failure, goals not achieved. Virtuous circle. Positive thought, or act as if, leads to dynamic body position, straight back, head held high, smile. Leads to liveliness, communicative enthusiasm. Leads to ability to take care of yourself. Eat well, exercise, allow yourself pleasure. Leads to high self-esteem. I'm worth it. I deserve to be happy. Leads to opening toward others, opportunities, network, ability to bounce back. Leads to creativity, constructive view of a situation, solutions, success, goals achieved.
I thought over this eloquent list. I was beginning to get the general idea and was aware that until now, many of my attitudes put me in the vicious circle column. That just showed how far I still had to go. I could hardly wait for Wednesday to arrive. I was anxious to find out what Claude had in store for me, and so I walked briskly across the André Citroën Park to reach our meeting place, just below the huge greenhouse. How could I have lived in Paris for so long and not known about this hidden glory of the plant world? As I walked down the avenues, my astonished eyes feasted on the luxuriant vegetation, the beauty of the water features, not to mention the numerous exotic trees and rare species of plants. The walk stirred my senses and reminded me just how absent nature was from my life. I recalled a really interesting article I had read by a Dr. Ian Alcock of the University of Exeter Medical School, published in Environmental Science and Technology. In the article, Dr. Alcock studied the relationship over time between mental health and nature, where the satisfaction curve clearly rose from the start and did not stop climbing. His conclusion, nature produced mental improvements on a daily basis for those who lived close to it. What greater encouragement did I need to get out into the country and go green? I kept an eye out for Claude and soon saw his tall, angular silhouette, his purposeful walk, his elegant but unfussy clothes. As ever, what struck me most of all was the kind, open expression on his face and the lively eyes that only a person really centered in his existence can have. We shook hands warmly, and he led me across the gardens.
Where are we going?
Over there, can you see?
Where, on the lawns?
No, just behind them.
I couldn't work out where he meant. All I could see was an enormous tethered hot air balloon emblazoned with the name Generali. Then, all at once, I understood.
You don't mean we're going to... Yes, we are, he replied, a mischievous glint in his eye. Have you brought the sheets of paper listing everything you no longer want to keep?
Yes, they're all here.
Good. Show me them.
He read all the sheets of paper carefully. I no longer want to be too kind. I no longer want to bend over backward to please other people. I no longer want to wait passively for things to happen to me. I no longer want Adrienne and me to quarrel all the time. I no longer want to be 10 pounds overweight. I no longer want to neglect how I look. I no longer want to let my life as a couple drift along. I no longer want to feel frustrated by my job. I no longer want my important decisions to depend on what my mother says. I no longer want to leave my dreams on the shelf.
I see you've been working hard, said Claude. Bravo. Before we go up in the sky, we're going to do some hands-on work. I'm going to show you how to make some nice paper aeroplanes.
He really was crazy, and yet I was beginning to like him. And so, despite the oddness of the task, I set to and made them without a word.
Well done, Claude declared when I had finished. We've got a real air force. Now we can get on board.
I followed him rather anxiously into the hot air balloon's basket. When it began to rise, I clung to him.
It's okay, Camille. Everything's going to be all right.
Ashamed of myself, I stood up straight to control my fear and looked directly at the horizon. My stomach was still doing somersaults, but I kept my eyes wide open to make sure I missed nothing. I could feel my heart pounding and wondered if I would get vertigo.
Be aware of everything you are feeling, so that you can describe it in a while, okay?
I kept hold of Claude's arm during the entire ascent, which was almost completely smooth. In the end, I was surprised to find I felt less vertigo than I had been expecting. I was still conscious of the pull of the void, my throat was dry, and my hands were shaking. But I was there, and I was coping. It was an incredible experience, and the view was to die for. It was so beautiful it brought tears to my eyes. Above all, I was becoming aware of what I was doing. I was capable of rising 500 feet into the air and of overcoming my fears. I was filled with an elated sense of pride, which brought to my face a smile that I could not suppress.
Anchor yourself, Camille. Anchor yourself, Claude whispered to me.
Seeing that I didn't understand, he explained the principle of positive anchoring, a technique that allows you to recover at will the physical and emotional feelings you experienced at a particular happy moment. First, I had to anchor myself to a moment like that, then to associate a word, image, or gesture to that sense of peace and happiness. Today in the balloon, I decided I would pinch the little finger on my left hand. From then on, with training, I would be able to recover my anchor whenever I needed it by reproducing the gesture associated with this first moment, and at the same time, recover the same positive emotional state. I still felt I should ask Claude for a more specific explanation of how to do this, to make sure I had understood. So, in detail, in order to feel again this sense of peace and confidence, I needed to recover the memory of that moment of intense emotion. By placing myself alone in a calm and comfortable spot, focused but relaxed, and even with my eyes closed, if that helped, I could conjure up a mental picture by revisiting that special memory, visualizing the scene once more, and immersing myself in the physical and emotional sensations I had felt then. At that point, I could repeat the associated gesture, pinching my little finger in this case, so as to intensify the wave of positive emotions.
You should practice it often to make sure the anchoring is effective, Claude told me.
I was still slightly skeptical, but promised I would try.
The time has come to launch all your little airplanes overboard, he went on, and to say farewell, once and for all, to all that weight. The symbolism of the gesture is very important.
While he looked on encouragingly, I launched my paper planes into the air one by one. All of a sudden, I felt liberated. By throwing out these things I no longer wanted, I was reinforcing my determination to change. I had switched on the process of transformation, even if I didn't yet fully grasp all the consequences. One thing was for sure, though. It was too late now to go back. I would have to accept the challenge. For the moment, I watched joyfully as my little bits of paper glided through the air. I even waved them goodbye. Take that, you useless burdens. Be very afraid. Your history. I was really enjoying myself.
When we were back on Terra Firma, Claude suggested we go for a coffee.
Well, Camille, are you proud of yourself?
Yes, I think so.
You can do better than that.
Yes, I'm proud of myself, I cried with more conviction.
That's better, he said, adding some hot water to the coffee he'd been served. The best way to bolster your self-esteem is to learn to be your own best friend. You have to value yourself, to have compassion for and to be kind to yourself, to show yourself gratitude as often as possible. Will you promise to do that for me?
I can try.
But won't I have a swollen head afterward? I joked. In your case, there's room for it, he immediately shot back. And speaking of that, for the start of next week, I want you to send me a list of all your best qualities, everything you're good at, all the successes you've had in your life. Can you do that?
Is that all? I'm warning you, it could be a very short list.
Ah, Camille, Camille. If you start all that again, I'll make you start at square one. Okay, okay. At first you might find it hard, but the more your brain is trained to look for the positive within you, the easier it will become.
It really will. I promise.
Oh, and I wanted to give you this.
He searched in his pocket and took out a small box. That made me laugh to myself. From a distance, someone might think he was offering me a beautiful ring and asking me to marry him. Oddly, I found that thought exciting. But it wasn't a ring, it was a lovely yellow lotus. The second charm. So Claude thought I had reached the second level of change. I had difficulty hiding the flush of pride surging in me and bringing color to my cheeks. My eyes were shining as I thanked him and added the pendant to the first one on the necklace. Claude received a call, which meant he had to leave quickly. Before going, he slipped a small piece of paper into my hand and then walked off without looking back. What a strange man.
Everything has changed, not to no longer be, but to become what is not yet. Epictetus. What if you drew me a portrait of the Camille you would like to be? Until very soon, Claude.
9. The Camille work in progress was hard at it. Claude had asked me for a list of everything I was good at, and the successes I felt I had known in my life. So over the following days, I spent my free time in a kind of introspective exploration, probing the depths of my soul and my memories to unearth the raw materials he was looking for. Positive experiences, personal qualities. At first, nothing more than a black hole. But then, little by little, they returned to the surface and took shape before my eyes. To help guide me, I kept referring to the list of qualities that Claude had sent. I wondered which ones best described me.
Adventurous, agreeable, ambitious, astute, audacious, autonomous, calm, combative, conciliatory, confident, creative, dedicated, diplomatic, direct,
disciplined, discreet, dynamic, efficient, empathetic, energetic, extroverted, faithful, flexible, generous, gentle, hard-working, honest, imaginative, independent, innovative, intelligent, intuitive, jovial, just, leader, methodical, motivated, multitasking, obliging, observant, obstinate, open-minded, optimist, organized, original, painstaking, patient, persevering, polite, precise, prudent, pugnacious, punctual, reserved, responsible, rigorous, self-controlled, sensitive, serious, sociable, spontaneous, stable, strategist, strong, stubborn, team player, tenacious, tolerant, willful. Agreeable, yes. Ambitious, not enough. Conciliatory, a little too much. Creative, I used to be. Sensitive, yes, no getting away from it. Serious and hard-working, out of necessity. Generous, empathetic, yes, to some extent. As for the most successful events in my life, apart from the birth of my son, of course, there hadn't been that many. Maybe the occasion when I had gotten an A+ in art and my teacher had congratulated me so warmly and told me I ought to carry on, that I was talented. It still made me happy to remember that. Yes, then I had felt really appreciated. There was also the day when I had earned my business studies degree and told my mother the good news on the phone. But was that really my pleasure? Or my mother's? I would have to talk about it with Claude. As for the portrait of the Camille I would like to become, for the moment, it was only a rough sketch. I wrote down all the ideas that occurred to me and sensed that even if it was all still unfocused, the process had begun and things were bound to become clearer. As I continued with this excavation of my identity, nearly every day Claude sent me hints and tips to help me move toward the virtuous circle. So it came as no surprise when, barely 10 minutes after I had woken up, I heard my mobile buzz and found he had sent me another text message. Good morning, Camille. Today you are to fill your day with humor and cheerfulness. That makes it easier to confront any little obstacles. Try pulling faces in front of the mirror. It's good for your morale and helps ward off wrinkles. Pull your tongue in all directions and shout, "Wah!" Mimic great sadness and great joy, like Marcel Marceau. Pronounce all your vowels in an exaggerated way. Have fun. Speak soon, Claude. I smiled. His exercise intrigued me, but it seemed a bit odd for me to be clowning about in the bathroom. At first, I was very hesitant, but gradually managed to relax, until finally I really let rip. My son was watching me from the doorway, unable to believe his eyes. What on earth are you doing, Mum? Gymnastics for plastic surgery, I replied without missing a beat. My reply astonished him, but children have an amazing ability to take on board the weirdest ideas. It looks like fun, he said seriously, like a judge on a talent show. Can I try? I invited him to join me, and soon we were miming, with our faces, a high-wire double act. Adrienne was incredibly good at it, and so I had no hesitation awarding him the clown first prize. He was so pleased at this that he was in a good mood all through breakfast, which, for once, we ate together, chatting the whole time. It had been ages since we'd done that. Yes, Claude was right. It did you a lot of good to start your day with a bit of laughter and fun. On another day, he suggested I try the game of the imaginary camera, an exercise he had invented to help me change the way I looked at my reality by changing my perception filter. When you go out, instead of focusing on sights that are unpleasant, ugly or irritating. Fix your attention on pleasant things. Take imaginary photos of happy coincidences in the street, on public transport, wherever you walk. So now, I had to train myself to be on the lookout for beauty. It turned out to be quite a revelation. Rather than inevitably turning my gaze to beggars, grumpy passers-by, or howling babies, I found myself staring at the sky, the pretty bird making its nest, a loving couple embracing, a mother caressing her child, a man helping an old lady carry her suitcase down the metro steps, or listening to the soft rustle of foliage. This new way of looking enchanted me. Each day I added to my collection of positive images, a photo album that was going to allow me to create a different view of the world. 10. As the weeks passed, and I could sense that the symptoms of my acute routineitis were slowly but surely fading, I began to really believe in Claude's method. What convinced me above all was his two-pronged approach. The idea of working on the basic problem. Who am I? What do I really want? At the same time as the symptoms, my self-image, my relation to the world, and other people. Have you noticed how the image you have of the world becomes more beautiful if you have a good self-image? Unfortunately, on this last point, I still had a long way to go, because I could not get over my issues with self-esteem. Every day the sight of myself in the mirror cast a shadow over my mood. I was a stern judge of myself, examining my reflection from all angles, and was scornful of the extra weight I seemed doomed to carry around forever. It wasn't too bad when I was standing. The buttons did up. It was sitting down when I felt guilty. Whenever the spare tire risked protruding over the size 8 I'd been too optimistic about, sometimes I tried to kid myself that the trousers had shrunk or that the skirt was meant to be tight. But the evidence was plain for me to see. The vise was tightening around me. Besides, I had launched that little paper plane from a hot air balloon. I had sworn in black and white that I didn't want to be carrying round those extra pounds with me anymore. It was a promise I had to keep. So I made another appointment with Claude to discuss it. I had been waiting for 15 minutes when the door opened. For once, Claude looked in a hurry.
Ah, Camille, come in. How are you? I'm sorry, I don't have much time for you today. I'm fitting you in between two meetings.
It's very kind of you, Claude. I just need your advice about my goal to lose weight.
He listened to me absent-mindedly, more concerned with tidying up the files strewn all over his desk. When he turned to put them in a cabinet, a sheet of paper fell from one of them. I got to my feet to pick it up. It was odd, a design for a building with lots of calculations and notes. I handed it to him. He took it from me, muttering his thanks. He seemed out of sorts.
Are you all right, Claude? You seem preoccupied.
I can come back another day if you prefer.
No, everything's fine, Camille. I've got a lot on my plate and I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed, that's all,
he reassured me with a smile. He put away the files as best he could. I was amazed how many of them there were. Could he really have so many clients? Did routinology have so many followers? He came and sat down again, automatically stroking his beard in the way a woman might run her hand through her hair, to regain his composure.
Fine. Well then, are you ready to go on a diet? Good. The key to achieving your objective is to frame it properly before you begin. Do you know the SMART method?
You need to make sure that your objective is S for specific.
You have to avoid it being vague. And M for measurable. In this case, for example, success would be losing 10 pounds. Then there's A, for attainable, defined as being achievable, thanks to a series of short steps. It mustn't be an unreachable star. R, for realistic, to keep you motivated, your objective has to make sense in relation to your personality and your possibilities. And finally, T for timely. You need to set yourself a deadline.
As he described the method to me, I saw myself as a sculptor, like Barbara Hepworth, imaginary chisel in hand, sculpting, shaping, creating my perfect objective. I drove the image from my mind to concentrate on reality.
Does all that seem clear, Camille?
Yes, yes, completely.
I'll give you a few minutes then to draw up your SMART objective. I'll be back.
He smiled and left the room. I got up and went to search for a piece of paper and a pencil in the same writing desk I had used at our first meeting. The sheet of paper was easy enough, but the pencils had been put away. Mechanically, I opened the drawer and, to my surprise, found a framed photo. I recognized the background as Central Park in New York. Two men were posing for the photograph as if they were brothers. The contrast between them was striking. One exuded an air of self-assurance, strength, and success. The other, in spite of his height, seemed almost fragile. A giant with feet of clay. His eyes seemed clouded by a raft of shadows. He had a family likeness to Claude, but must have weighed 45 pounds more. Perhaps he was his brother. Hearing steps in the corridor, I quickly shut the drawer.
How's it going, Camille?
Oh, fine. I just need a pencil.
You should have taken one. Here, use this.
Thanks, I stammered, embarrassed at my tactless curiosity.
The entire time I was considering my SMART objective, I was wondering who the man in the photo could have been. I resolved to ask Claude at some point. Half an hour later, I left with my objective under my arm and with 10 pounds to lose under my belt. By this stage, I was as motivated as Mother Teresa. I thought it was going to be, pardon the expression, a piece of cake. However, I was not taking into account the cold war that kitchens can declare.
11. Over the next few days, I summoned up the strength to put my good resolutions into practice.
Just saying the word diet makes one put on weight, Claude had warned me. You need to learn to find pleasure elsewhere. That was a good one, as if anyone had ever found pleasure in steamed broccoli or broiled fish. Think about spices, Camille.
Why not? After all, what had I got to lose, apart from a few pounds?
So, I raided the local supermarket and came back with an armful of spices that would add flavor, and I hoped, raise the troops' morale. Garlic, coriander, turmeric, paprika, curry powder, garam masala, and gray, black, and white pepper. I didn't care what color it was, provided the taste was intoxicating. The enemy was tastelessness. In the cold war of hot food, I learned how to use the secret weapons of healthy eating. The trick of using fat-free yogurt, the heroic part white meats could play in my special dishes. Low fat, that was the challenge, because there were enemies lurking in every dark corner of the cupboard, cans of Pringles and shortbread cookies lying in ambush, waiting slyly for their moment of glory. Their greatest ally? My own son. There was no way I could sacrifice his appetite on the altar of my good intentions. So I had to suffer and carry on buying all those forbidden fruits that he wolfed down so innocently in front of me, while I stoically ate an apple. But the worst hour of the day was not his snack time. No, that came at nightfall, when the call of the wine rack became pressing, even irresistible. The danger of a calorie bomb attack was at its height. Temptations rained down on me, threatening to destroy all my best intentions. And what about the macaroni syndrome? It was as perverse as its cousin from Stockholm, leading me to sympathize with the enemy, to do a deal with my conscience, just a tiny spoonful to finish up my boy's plate. Even so, my bravery paid off. In a few days, I could already see some real improvements. Encouraged by these early victories, I held fast, silently muttering to myself the hymn of the slimming experts to the glory of lower fat, less sugar, reduced salt. Alas, hardly had the trumpets of victory begun to sound than an enemy I had underestimated mounted a counterattack. Boredom.
In the office, we were going through a lean patch, and my boss preferred to give what work there was to my full-time colleagues. Each hour seemed like 360 minutes, maybe even 500, sometimes 1,000. I could hardly wait for the 4 o'clock break. In other words, I was stagnating. It was then, of course, that the idea of surrendering raised its pointy little head. What if I forgot my diet just this once, just for today? Who would ever know? I went down to the vending machine, that little shop of calorific horrors, just a tiny bar of something. After all, where was the harm? I was just about to slip a coin into the slot when my mobile began to vibrate. It was a text message from Claude. How was it possible? Did he have a sixth sense or something? I cursed him under my breath.
How are things? Are you bearing up?
I replied with a casual lie. Of course. Fab. Have a good afternoon.
Cam.
He'll never know. He'll never know. I kept telling myself as I turned back to the machine, money in hand. But it was too late. I could feel Claude's presence all around me, as if his eyes were prying into everything. Big Brother is watching you. I was living the diet version of 1984. Thwarted, with one last sad glance at the machine, I dragged my feet back to my desk. I opened my drawer where a packet of almonds awaited me. I allowed myself 5 plus an apple, binging like an ant. Then suddenly a sense of revolt surged within me. His advice about health and well-being was starting to get on my nerves. Nothing but the worst hypocrisy.
Take the stairs instead of the elevator. Go out for a walk at lunchtime. Blah. You can also firm your buttocks sitting down. You simply have to clench and then relax them discreetly. Blah, blah. Bored, waiting for the metro? Stand on tiptoe. Then lower your heels down again. As for your abs, why not pull your stomach in whenever you pass a door? Blah, blah, blah. Easy peasy. Yada, yada, yada.
Yes, I know. Doubtless I'd reached the resistance stage. But who wouldn't feel rebellious at the idea of giving up all those sweet temptations paraded in front of us all the time? Nonetheless, I needed to take care if I didn't want to feel like a hopeless failure when it came to filling in my promises notebook, another of Claude's ideas to make me more committed to my resolutions and avoid any backsliding. For every promise I made myself, he told me I had to tick the box, kept or not kept. And there was no way I was going to see him in a few days' time with a long list of not kepts in the book. I was thinking about all this when my dear colleague, Franck, in reality my office enemy, number one, called out,
Are you okay, Camille? You've got a very strange look on your face.
Oh, yes. Everything's fine. I'm trying to concentrate, that's all.
Ah, it's just that you look as if you're about to lay an egg.
Ha ha, very funny. There was no way I was going to tell him I was clenching my buttocks. He never missed an opportunity to bait me anyway.
Talking of eggs, take a look at the top of your head.
Take that. One all, Baldy. From the way his cheeks flushed, I could tell I'd hit home. I wasn't very proud of myself, but he shouldn't have started it. He was forever going at me, and I always dreaded his jibes. I would have to talk to Claude about it. As if there was some telepathic link between us, at that very moment I got a chat request on my computer.
Well, Camille, how's your mind-over-body exercise going?
Not bad. Sometimes it's hard to resist temptation, though.
But you have?
Yes.
Good. Don't forget to write that down in your positive notebook. Have I mentioned that to you already?
No, not yet.
Ah, it's very important. Buy a small address book and jot down in alphabetical order all your triumphs, big and small, and all the things that make you happy, big and small. Soon you'll have a whole collection of positive anchoring. You'll see, it's excellent for your self-esteem and personal satisfaction.
Interesting. Okay, Claude, I'll think about it.
I saw the little pencil icon wobbling, showing he was busy writing me a long reply. A ping told me he had finished.
I'm counting on you to not simply pay lip service to this. Each resolution has to count. Many people know what they're supposed to do to lead a happy life, but never really put it into practice. It's not always easy to keep one's promises. Laziness, tiredness, discouragement are all enemies lying in wait. But keep going. It will be worth it.
I took his word for it. 12. When I left work that day, I passed by a bookshop and remembered Claude's advice. I thought the idea of a positive notebook was great. Why not give it a try? At the very least, it would give me something to do in front of the TV. I went in and chose a pocket-sized one that would be easy to slip into my coat or purse, so that it would always be handy. My day had been so empty, it was exhausting. I couldn't wait to get home and relax. But I'd forgotten what the atmosphere there was really like. No sooner had I crossed the threshold than icy tension hit me. Adrien was having one of his off days and barely said hello. The girl I employed to look after him and help with his homework didn't seem to be in a much better mood. Glancing at the schoolbooks lined up in ranks on the living room table, I guessed the reason for the chill. Charlotte never needed any encouragement to complain about my son's lack of attention and motivation. He fidgeted the whole time, got up on any pretext. He wanted something to eat, to drink, or to blow his nose, or go to the bathroom. He invented a stream of excuses to put off the moment when he really got down to work. She accompanied her diatribe with irritated blinking and a disapproving pursing of the lips. I thanked her for her lucid debriefing, while at the same time sighing wearily at the prospect of taking over from her. A quarter of an hour later, I had already reached the end of my patience. Entrenched in his preteen logic, Adrien blamed Charlotte. She was useless at explaining things, and besides, he didn't like her. Seeing that his arguments weren't having any great effect, he changed tack and said that he just couldn't manage it all. His teacher gave them far too much homework. I should have seen that the poor kid had had more than he could take, but I was feeling the same way, and so all I could think of was to punish him by not allowing him any time on his tablet. He ran off into his bedroom, slamming the door behind him. I had to use all my diplomatic skills to calm things down and get him to come back to his homework. When Sebastian arrived, I was trying to make dinner with one hand, holding a workbook open in the other, while getting Adrien to recite the wretched lesson. Sebastian gave me a peck on the cheek and asked if I had a good day without so much as looking at me. I think that if I'd replied, "No, it was dreadful, actually. Thanks for asking," he wouldn't have noticed. I could sense the pressure building, but tried my best to ignore it. Adrien found it hard to learn things by heart. He picked things up quickly, but was intuitive rather than methodical. And with every line he stumbled over, I could feel my calm evaporating. I was a perfectionist, and I found his sloppiness intolerable. Sebastian reappeared from the bedroom, his shirt open and half outside his trousers. He headed straight for the bathroom.
"I don't believe it. What on earth is this mess?" he shouted as soon as he went in. "Who did this?"
"Not me," retorted Adrien. A typical knee-jerk preteen response. I felt obliged to intervene. "Sorry, it must have been me, Seb. I was really running late this morning." The growl of a bear in the depths of the apartment.
Charming.
He came back into the living room, carrying his laptop, and immediately flew off the handle again.
"Why are there crumbs all over the sofa? Adrien, how many times have I told you not to have your snack there?"
I abandoned my cooking pot and workbook and went to join Sebastian. I was fed up with him arriving stressed out and cross like this. It was becoming a habit. Nonetheless, I tried to calm things down.
"Don't worry, I'll see to it," I said.
"No, I'll do it," he replied curtly.
"Here we go again," Sighing deeply, he brushed off the crumbs, then stretched out on the sofa with his computer. He had taken off his socks, and for some reason, the sight of his toenails wiggling about on the coffee table under my nose irritated me still further. Or maybe it was his complete indifference to the domestic battle I was going to have to deal with before I had the chance to sit down. I usually let things go, but that evening it was all too much for me. I had to say something. Are you okay? I'm not disturbing you, am I?
What's the matter now? He snapped.
I can't imagine, except that perhaps I might need a bit of help.
What are you going at me for?
Oh, for God's sake, I'm not going at you. I was simply asking you to pay me some attention.
And now you're shouting at me. Thanks, that's really great at the end of a hard day's work. Have you paid me any attention since I got here? Well, that's just the goddamn limit. You're going at me for looking after your son? There you go again, shouting at me.
Seeing a storm brewing, Adrien slipped away into his room, delighted at avoiding his homework.
Right, that's it. I've had enough of doing everything myself. Oh, I see. You're having one of your usual little hissy fits.
What? You swan in here. Ignore me and Adrien. Start pissing around on the computer with your little virtual friends.
Do you really think I had such a great time today?
I've been working like a dog. I had 3 meetings back to back.
You mean I haven't been working?
Okay, yes. You do work, he said condescendingly.
What are you implying?
That working 4 days a week isn't the same or what? I never said that.
You might as well have, I cried. I was at the end of my tether. I've had it. Let's see how you get on without me. I'm taking off my apron, handing in my notice.
That's it. Quit, why don't you? Why don't we get divorced while we're at it? It seems as though that's what you want.
His words struck me like a boomerang in mid-flight. Sobbing, I picked up my coat and left the apartment, slamming the door behind me. 13. Out in the street, I looked up at our windows and saw my son's sad face. He drew a heart in the air, aimed at me, as if he thought it was his fault Sebastian and I had quarreled. His gesture almost made me cry. I smiled back up at him, and then I set off for a walk. I needed to calm down. I was hoping I wouldn't bump into any neighbors. I didn't want anyone to see me like this. But that's ridiculous, worrying about what other people think at a time like this. Still, I avoided looking any passerby in the eye. I was sure my distress was obvious in my face, and I didn't want them to see. No witnesses to my depression, please. I walked to a small square and called Claude.
Claude? Camille here. Am I disturbing you? I asked through my sniffles. I didn't have to tell him I was in trouble. He guessed that straight away.
It's Sebastian. We've had a fight. I couldn't take it anymore. It's as if there's a gulf between us.
I told him everything, and it did me good to sense that he was listening so closely to my woes. What luxury to have such a receptive ear.
He seems completely incapable of offering me anything I need.
And what do you need? Claude shot back.
I don't know. I need him to pay attention to me, to be kind and thoughtful. But instead of that, it's like having a robot in the apartment. He does nothing but moan, and then hide behind his computer, in his own little world. I even get jealous of his virtual friends. While he's online, everything around him could collapse, and he wouldn't notice. And in the meantime, I have to be everywhere, looking after Adrien, his homework, cooking dinner. It's not fair.
I understand, Camille.
On top of that, he's forever telling me I don't listen to him. But that's not true. He's the one who won't listen. I can't get a word in. He brings everything back to himself.
I was pacing up and down the deserted square, my nerves still jangling.
Ah, yes. The he's the one who game. That's not good. In fact, that's why you can't hear each other. It's like two deaf people talking. If you're listening unwillingly, it means you're not listening at all. To really listen, you have to be able to identify with what the other person is experiencing. To have empathy. You can't imagine how rare it is to find someone who truly knows how to listen. I often tell myself that whoever knows that will be the king of this world. Camille, remember that in an argument, not everything is as it seems. You have to learn to read between the lines to uncover the real emotions. Behind a criticism, there may be fear. Behind aggression, there could be sadness, or an unhealed wound. As I listened to him, I drew my coat closer around me. I suddenly felt cold, all these swirling emotions. But it's so hard to listen sympathetically. You should see how he looks at me when we're arguing. I get the dreadful feeling that he doesn't love me. That's interesting. How about replacing that he with I?
I was too taken aback to say a word.
Yes, you heard me correctly.
You mean I don't love myself?
Yes, that's it, Camille. You tend to interpret your partner's behavior through the lens of your own negative thoughts. And that distorts everything. Right now, you don't love yourself very much because you've got it into your head that you are less pretty with those few extra pounds and your first little wrinkles. You unconsciously project onto your husband your fear that you are no longer someone to be loved. And if you carry on like that, it'll become a self-fulfilling prophecy. You'll have confirmed your worst-case scenario. You're no longer desirable. And so, he doesn't love you anymore.
His words slowly seeped into my mind, but the soothing effect they had was cut short by the arrival of two men in the park. They had hoods pulled up over their heads, and warily I watched them approach. I had been so desperate to hear what Claude had to say that it had not occurred to me it might be unwise to hang around at night in this deserted square. I quickly made my way toward the exit, trying not to give the impression I was running away. All of a sudden, I felt a hand on my shoulder. I cried out and swiveled to break free of his grasp. One of the two men leaned toward me. He was young and reeked of weed.
"You've dropped something," he said, holding out the scarf I usually tie around the strap of my bag.
"Ah, thanks so much," I stammered, almost snatching it from him. Then I rushed away. At the other end of the line, Claude was getting worried.
"Hello, Camille? Hello? Are you still there?"
Swiftly back on the well-lit streets of my own neighborhood, I waited for my heart rate to subside before I answered him. "I'm sorry, Claude. Just a little incident. What were you saying?" In order to illustrate what was going on when we argued, he outlined the principle of the dramatic triangle. He explained how, in this negative scenario, each person in a relationship could successively play the role of victim, persecutor, and savior.
"And the problem is that there can never be any positive resolution unless you quit the game altogether. In your case, here's what happens. He is the persecutor because he moans the whole time. You're the savior when you offer to sweep up the crumbs, but then the victim when you complain he doesn't help you. Next, you become the persecutor by criticizing him for his behavior, and it's his turn to be the victim when he complains what a frightful day he's had, and so on. Each of you swaps roles, unable to find any other way out than the inevitable full-blown argument. But there are ways of getting out of the triangle."
"What are they? Quick, tell me."
"First of all, you need to recognize what's going on in order to put a stop to the game and wait for a calmer moment when you can renew the dialogue. Second, clearly identify your needs so that you can ask your partner directly and he can see without a decoder what it is you want. If it's legitimate and reasonable, there's no reason he shouldn't agree."
"That's interesting."
I pressed the mobile to my ear, trying to ignore the fact that my fingertips were freezing. I changed hands and thrust the free one as deep as I could into my coat pocket.